Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Big MX Radio Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Luxon MX. You can go to LuxonMX.com right now, and when you're checking out, you can enter discount code BIGMX2025, save 10% off your entire order. If that's a brand new set of triple clamps, that's about $100 in your jeans. And I am your host, Brad Gebhardt. With me on the line for this episode of Racer's Mindset is the mad scientist of the mind himself, and he goes by the name of Andrew Hopson, otherwise known as Hoppo. Hoppo, how's it going?
Good, Brett. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad, my friend, and I'm excited because this conversation is a very important one. It's about personal development. This is a personal development podcast. We are almost, we're six weeks now into 2025. This is 2025. Let's all stay on the same page here. And yeah, like before you know it, the year is already racing past us, and like people have, they've set New Year's resolutions, they've said they want to make some changes, and personal growth, personal development is something that I think is on a lot of people's minds. I think there's a lot of people who don't know where to start with it. Shortly after this portion of the podcast, we are going to break down the Tampa Supercross. So if you're watching or listening to the entire thing, if you want to skip ahead, by all means, but if you want to get some real knowledge, and if you really want to learn from somebody who has bootstrapped his way through life to have some really impressive credentials to his life, then you want to listen to a guy like Hoppo, who I would consider to not only be extremely educated in this subject, but also somebody that I look to as a mentor. Are you ready to dive in, my friend?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
First question that sort of comes to mind when it comes to this is that when it comes to personal growth, it usually means change. And this is not something that everybody comes to easily. There's not a lot of people, not something that a lot of people are comfortable with. Change is often a good thing, but it can often be perceived as a very bad thing or a very uncomfortable thing. When does someone know that they're ready for a change?
I think that there's several things, right? It can be your group of friends. It could be not happy where you're at, your current environment. There's several things that are triggers that go, I need to be better. I need to do this. I need to do that. So it's kind of tough, and it does come down to the individual, really. Sometimes friends and family aren't the best people to take advice from because they haven't been where you want to go. So that comes back to, you know, your goals and your directions and what you're going to do and who's in that circle to help you get to those places.
And certainly, like, so from my experience, it often takes a certain level of being fed up with being where you're at. I feel like you're not going to change until you either have to change or you have to want that change more than you want more than you want the things that are holding you from those goals. You need to want those results. I once read that either sacrifice to get your goals or your goals will become your sacrifice. What do you have to say about that?
Very true. Very true. I mean, it's goals are something that you need to do daily. I mean, your mind, your left, right brain is just like going to the gym and exercising the bicep curls and building muscle. You have to do the same with your mind, and it's incremental. And that's why you need to write your goals down. That's why you need to think about where you need to go and constantly remind yourself that this is what I need to do. This is what I have to do on a daily basis if that's where I want to go to get to that point in the life where I don't think anyone is ever really, truly happy when they get there. I think, you know, every end goal is a starting point for a new goal, which requires, you know, change again. And change is tough because you're requiring to do something you've never done before. I mean, you can go to the gym and lift every day. And all that sort of stuff that's repetitious, but to make incremental movements, you're not going to wake up today and go, I'm going to be a millionaire tomorrow. That just doesn't work. You have to take every step in that direction to reach those goals. And that's where you need a really good support crew around you to make those happen.
How have you been able to develop that that sort of the companions around you, people who are going to keep you accountable? And how do you decipher that? Like sort of how can you identify those people around you?
I mean, for me personally, I just decided that I was just going to start on the body first, right? I needed to get myself into the best shape, then everything else would fall into place. So then, you know, I find personally the stronger I become physically, the stronger I become mentally. And then you create that person that you want to be, and then you will attract that person that will help you or help, you know, guide you into those circles where you need to be.
Certainly. So when it comes to the world of personal development, a lot of people will sit themselves down and they'll come up with like five or six different big things that they'd want to change, which can often be very daunting. It can also create a lot of sort of unnecessary stress on someone that, like, basically, like, they're feeling very lost. They're feeling very much like there's this massive mountain to climb. How do you compartmentalize that and break it down into digestible elements that someone can attack day by day, task by task? Because, like, when it comes to, say, like, going on a road trip, you don't drive all of the kilometers all at once. The destination is off in the distance. You have to worry about what's right in front of your hood. How do you explain that to people? How do you convey that message and allow them to continue to stay motivated, stay positive and confident that the work is in fact basically going to at least give you a good chance at rearing the results you're looking for?
I think the first thing is find someone that is where you want to be.
Okay.
And talk to that person. Again, if you want to be a doctor or a lawyer, well, they're the people you're going to hang out with. If you want to be a real estate investor, you're going to go hang out with real estate investors. So you need to really define that group or that goal where you need to go, and then look for those people. And you'll be surprised how many people there will be there to help you when you ask. But you got to do the work. There's no shortcuts. You can't cut corners. You have to take every step. And I think that's where a lot of people fall short, is that change requires a lot of work, physical and mental. But the best thing is to find someone that's already been where you want to go, and then they can help you leapfrog or increase the fold time, whichever terms you want to use to get there.
Can you tell me about a time that you set a goal and worked towards it and ultimately achieved it?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, when I exited Geico, I was in some pretty bad spots, and I had to you know, make some pretty hard changes and had to cut some people and all that sort of stuff, which wasn't fun. But you know, I took on a path of being able to understand commercial real estate or self-storage at one. So I learned how to underwrite, value commercial real estate. I got into those circles that people were doing that. And then I became good at underwriting, valuing self-storage. Went to a few meetups, ended up brokering a couple of deals, made some good money, and then which led me into now being a general partner in a fund. So, you know, and to say that, you know, that was a 3 to 4, 4.5 year goal to understand that and, you know, to get that position. So again, it's been around those like-minded people that will help you get to those positions.
How is personal growth measured? And I guess that's kind of an open-ended question. There's a lot of different ways to look at that. But how do you view the ability to measure how far you've come over a given amount of time?
I think the first thing is you can't compare yourself to anyone, right? You can only look at yourself and go, how far I've come. And sometimes that seems so incremental. You seem like you're going backwards at times. But again, that's when it just comes back to your, you know, your daily habits. Nothing changes unless your daily habits change. If you don't change your daily habits and everything you do from the minute you wake up to you go to bed, nothing will change. No one's going to give you anything for not doing anything. You have to do the work. There's no way around it.
Fair enough. So with that, it's time to introduce a brand new segment to the Racer's Mindset, a segment called Ask Hoppo. Hoppo is the expert. You're on the hot seat, my friend. We've got three questions for you. Are you ready?
Let's go.
All right. Doug Smale from Vancouver up here in Canada. I'm struggling to forge new habits and stick to them. I can string a few days together, but a week or so later, I'm right back where I started. Help.
You're going to have to do some due diligence. Make some hard calls, write your goals down, view them every morning, and it's the only way. You're just going to have to do it. If you want it bad enough, you will find a way to do it. You have to eliminate the excuses, put away the bad food. Again, this comes back to sometimes the environment. If the whole family's not on that journey and you're the only one and you're paving the way and they're seeing the changes, and hopefully they all get on board and you're going to have a healthier lifestyle all around the family.
How do you identify the things that you want, and how can you sort of prove to yourself that you want to make those changes more than you want to have the things that are ultimately holding you back from that those results? Like I personally want to lose another 10 pounds. How do I help myself come to the realization or help myself decide that I want to go for a run or hit the gym or to not indulge in different dietary habits rather than rolling into a drive-through or sleeping in when I should go to the gym? How do I look within myself and make that decision that I want that those results more than I want the alternative?
Oh, I had a thought and I just lost it. I mean, you just...
Perfect. That's what I do.
You just got to have your daily non-negotiables.
Yeah.
Simple. It just comes down to those daily habits, your non-negotiables, and talking to yourself in the right manner. It's like, I'm not going to eat junk food. I'm not going to do the drive-through. I'm better than that. You know, crap food in, you get crap results. So I think that it does take a long time to break those habits, but once you get there, you'll be surprised how easy it really is. And I'm the same, like alcohol. Like I love alcohol, but I hate what it does to me, and I barely really touch alcohol anymore at all. And I don't even crave it or miss it anymore. Every now and then I might take a sip, but my life is better without it. More productive, more energy. And that's what I want.
Better sleep, the whole nine yards.
Oh, for sure.
Excellent. Next question on Ask Hoppo comes from Dave Cron from Winchester, Massachusetts. It's probably got a bit of a northeastern accent on top of that. But I'm just imagining from Winchester. I try and eat clean, but I'm unsure of how to utilize and implement carbs into my diet without feeling like I'm eating the wrong thing. What do I do, Hoppo?
Look, this just comes down to education on food. And unfortunately, we, you know, as a society now, there's fast food everywhere. Food is easy. Everything's packaged in the grocery stores. So I would probably jump onto something like MyFitnessPal or one of those easy apps that can help guide you and educate you through. You know, they've all got a barcode or a scanner, and you can go through and you can, you know, look at what food is made up and what the ingredients are and what go, oh, wow, geez, no wonder I can't lose weight. That's a little heavy on the fats, or that's a little heavy on the processed carbs. So again, it comes down to education and just knowing what food is. You can go a lot deeper than that, obviously, and then, you know, when to eat protein, when not to eat protein and carbs and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, for the average person that's kind of stuck, you know, the MyFitnessPals, and I can't remember the one that you have, can help you shortcut a lot of that information to get you some basic knowledge on what food really is. Cause we're not taught that anymore. You know, this is stuff you have to learn by yourself.
Right. That's I happen to use the First Form app. I can measure all of my macronutrients and eat every single meal, whether you write a description of what that meal is, it can give you basically like your its best guess as to what exactly you're putting in your body, or you can actually scan the barcodes and it'll give you the hard and fast portioned out dietary, basically like that whole profile. So as long as you're being accurate with your measurements, you should be able to sort of figure that out. When it comes to carbs, though, when do you feel like when, I guess that's, it's sort of different depending on what sort of day you're having. But let's just say like your average training day, where do you fit your carbs in?
I mean, I'll try and do carbs before a bicycle ride. Like I'll do oats, like a cup of oats and some honey, that in, 2 or 3 hours before. That way the glycogen gets into my muscles. I don't eat a lot of carbs to extent unless it's in the vegetables. And like I said, I just try and eat as clean and as fresh as I can. And it's like, just prior to the before where we spoke, like if you're wanting to lose weight, if you've got kilos or pounds, I don't know which metrics we'll work in, but say you got 10 kilos or you got 10 pounds. Let's just use 10 as a round number. I mean,
Stone.
10 stone, 12 pounds. You're really going to have to know your macros. And once you know those macros, it is, and again, I was overweight. I was 10, 15 pounds overweight. I had to learn it. I measured food. Yeah, it was painful for 2 weeks. But once I worked out the barcodes and what was good food and bad food and carbs and fats and proteins, then, like I said, those apps are pretty handy for the average guy to educate pretty quick and go, all right, that's why I couldn't lose weight. I was training, I was doing all this cardio, I was lifting. It's like I'm well over on the fats every day. That's a problem. Well, I'm well over on the carbs. So once you balance that out, and like I said, those apps are amazing for the average person, and even down the line to educated people, that they'll help you get to that point. And it just comes down to due diligence and again, daily habits.
100%. I'll also throw this in there is I think the key to getting the most out of those apps is to be 1000% honest with the app of what's going in. Like you're not going to trick the app into like, oh, I had a donut, but I didn't put it on my app.
Right.
So that didn't count against my day. I'm like, well, the app is impartial. If you're gonna lie to the app, like go for it. Like that is just, you're just like, you're also just lying to yourself.
I forgot the beer I had last night.
Exactly. Or yeah, like those nachos didn't count because I just worked out beforehand. No, just put what went in goes in the app. And what you'll notice is like you'll really start to get a good idea of when you do slip. What are those glaring issues of like, okay, my food's not that bad. Like, where am I slipping here? And then you put in like a day where like just like, yeah, everybody has one where like it wasn't the cleanest eating. And you're like, holy crap. I just put away 5,000 calories and most of which was in the evening in the form of like booze or treats. You know what I mean? Like, well, that like essentially you're identifying your own problem. And you can, and then from there you can decide whether or not you want to dial that back or not.
Right. And again, sometimes I guess for some people, it is tough in a family environment where you got kids, you got a wife, everyone's working, and then you're trying to stay consistent and the kids are having pizza and it's this and it's that. I mean, again, how bad do you want it? I mean, that's what it really comes down to. And
Totally.
if you're 10, 15, 20, even say 30 pounds overweight and you're dedicated, I mean, you got to understand that it's going to be, 2 pounds a week consistently following that trend, it might take you 6 to 8, 12 months to get to that point where you need to be. So it's a long time for some people.
Certainly is. All right. So the next question here on Racer's Mindset is from Rick Davis from Springfield, Wyoming. My motivation feels inconsistent. One day I'm feeling optimistic and that every rep is taking me closer to my goals. Other times I feel a lot less hopeful. How do I find consistency in my motivation?
Again, comes back to your daily habits. You got to let the emotions and the egos go, and you have to do the work.
You have to kind of exist within that mundane. Is that you realize that like you're gonna do a lot of the good. You got to do a lot of good things, and you have to do them repeatedly. You're gonna consistently like keep moving the bar, but when it comes to like in the journey of fitness, you're gonna go on a lot of runs. You're gonna go and like you're gonna go in for another leg day again. I read a quote once and it said, success isn't owned, it's rented, and rent is due every single day.
Again, it just comes back to those non-negotiables. You know, like this morning, my alarm went off at 4:15. It was cold. It was raining, pouring down rain. I went to the gym and I swam for an hour. I didn't want to get in that pool. Hell no. But I had to. I wanted to because I signed up to do a half Ironman. I had to learn how to swim again. You know? So, again, it's the wants and the needs just come back to your non-negotiables. I am getting up regardless. You know, it's like today. Like, no one rode today because it rained. The young kid that at work that does triathlons is going to the Worlds. He rode in the rain today. It's like he had a non-negotiable. I have to ride. I'm all good effort, boy.
There you go. Like, do you find that sometimes, like you're training yourself for a half Ironman, that setting yourself up for stuff like that or Leadville, like basically like purposely placing external pressure on yourself, basically saying like, if I don't continue training, like I'm not going to be ready. Like the day that I'm doing Leadville is not getting any further away than it is already. Like it's getting closer by the minute. I either train now or I won't be prepared. Do you feel like setting up situations like that is beneficial to your overall progression? Because it basically produces that pressure.
That's a great question. I think there's probably a couple of ways you could answer it or look at it. Having ridden bicycles so much, I know that Leadville, it doesn't matter how much preparation I do, it's going to suck.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to hurt. Yep. And the way I look at it is, and I spoke to a few people about Leadville and how they've done it, what they did, whether it's Training Peaks or whatever, any of those other apps. You know, the first focus is the half Ironman in May, but like you just said, it's like, it's not getting further away. Like we're already 6 weeks into the year. Right. So again, like I would rather just ride a bicycle every day, but no, now I incorporate swimming and running, and I actually enjoy swimming, and swimming is so incremental. Like I've swam the distance, but I can't swim the distance continually. That screws with me, right?
Yeah.
Like I swam 2,200 meters this morning. I didn't swim it consistently.
Why not?
Because I'm still not strong enough. I've still got work to do.
The hell, Hoppo.
But also what I found, and this is me personally, is like if I swim 3 or 4 days in a row, I'm worse. So I try and do it every second day.
Okay. That's what I do.
But my running is not good. I mean, I ran 13 miles on Sunday after 100 miles on a bicycle on Saturday. But, man, running's just as tough. So
there you go. Time for us to crack open. Actually, last thing, the final thought here on the Racer's Mindset portion of this podcast. The person who solves your problems is not the person who created or caused them. Meaning you must grow in order to solve the problems you've created.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's like the quote, you know, the man that steps in the river twice, you know, he's not the same the second time around because everything has changed. We have to continually grow. The minute that you don't grow, you're left behind. And that's in every aspect. I mean, that's in relationships, in your job for money, strength, fitness, whatever it is. You have to continually push yourself or you just get left behind.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. All right, it's time to talk some Supercross. Sound good?
Oh, yeah. Let's hit the Supercross.
To say that Tapa Supercross was a banger was a little bit of an understatement, Hoppo, because we had two different factory superstars exit the series, and then we had a lifelong factory superstar, a champion in the 250 class, the brother of maybe one of the greatest Supercross racers of all time, finally get his first victory in the premier class. What do you want to start talking with? We're going to start off with Mookie or what?
Yeah, let's start there. I mean, Malcolm congrats. Stewart. I mean, to see those, you know, let's just take him for an example. I mean, he had one of the baddest guys as a brother you could ever ask for. I felt like he's probably all his life been overshadowed by that to an extent. And, you know, I can tell the story that, you know, when you see that picture of the Honda with 259 on it in their garage, I was there. That was an undercover project. And that was the only photo that was ever taken there. So, you know, we had seen Malcolm, you know, at, I think he was like probably 6 or 7 then. That's a long time ago. And to see him where he is now and the work that they put in. I mean, when you're seeing him off the bike, I've seen him in some various stages. I mean, he was lean. Like he looked strong. And that just goes to show that, you know, a guy that's sometimes a 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10th place guy is still doing the same amount of work as the guy's winning.
Mm-hmm.
Just all the cards fell in his lap on Saturday night.
Yeah, they certainly did. He was fast. He had pace. That section, let's talk about the track a little bit and how he was able to dissect it, because I was really impressed with Malcolm in the way that the transitions of the track were very different than we would typically see. Like there's a couple of really fast triples, that you didn't really get into the pocket. Like they were almost like the faces were a little bit laid down, which is like surprised me that actually sort of played into his strengths, because I think of Malcolm more as like a technician sort of dissecting the track, like with his scalpel rather than like really blitzing through stuff. But the section right before the whoops, it seemed like for whatever reason, he was the only one able to pull the trigger on going 2-3. And then just basically like he landed full throttle, like throttle the stop, fourth, fifth gear. And just like he was like a hot knife through butter when it came to the whoops. And actually when he ended up inheriting the lead, at that point, Chase Sexton, who had gone down at the end of the whoop section, he's lucky he didn't hit him.
Right. I mean, Chase had some other issues. I mean, his throttle was, the return cable was jammed in the throttle. So he was actually.
Was that before or after the crash, though? That's after the crash.
No, that was on the parade lap.
Oh, my. Okay.
He went down the parade lap. So his throttle was not returning the whole way.
Oh, so he had to like turn it on and turn it off.
Turn it off.
Yeah.
So he struck. I mean, he had some issues through that, which he did pretty damn good, considering that. I don't know if I want to ride that Supercross track having to force the throttle
off. That's next. That's.
And I think that's when he crashed. I think he miscued, and the throttle was still on, and push it and tuck the front, and that's when it went down.
That's so crazy. Where,
if he hadn't had that throttle issue, would Mookie have beat him? Who knows? We'll never know. But congrats to Mookie. It took him a few years to get it done. And, yeah, I'm pumped for him. Always good to see stuff. That's just what makes the sport so much better, right? I mean, who could have wrote this script? Where we at, what, 6, 7 races in now?
5.
You could never have written this script at all.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I think what, for me, what stuck out was the fact that didn't matter what pit shirt that you were wearing, you had a hug or a high five or a fist bump for Malcolm. Yeah, really, really impressive to see what he's able to, that like he's just been able to foster so many great relationships, and people were just happy for Mookie to see him make it happen.
Oh, for sure. And again, like some of those guys do their whole career and never even get a chance at a podium. Right.
There you go.
He won one. I mean, you know, 10 years or so just trying to do the best you can.
Yeah, absolute. So, one of the things that was a bit of a point of contention, I guess we can talk about it now, is, this track had not one, but two different sand sections. The corner was pretty typical. I think the inside was faster. There were some guys who were able to go outside, maintain momentum, but I didn't see anyone going out there to make passes. Not to say that you often see passes happening on the outside in pro motocross or supercross, but not a lot of guys were going out there. They were maybe going out there if they knew they were going around someone who's a lot slower and knew they could blast around them. But, the long straightaway, gave people all kinds of fits. Including, a couple of times going through, it seemed like Malcolm was that maybe actually one of the most consistent going through that. Like, I don't think it was anything over the top special, but he was always very consistent, just hitting his marks through there. It seemed like Ken Roczen struggled with it a couple of times. He had a couple of close calls in it even before he ends up getting together with Tristan Lane. And then they ended up going down. It was a pretty scary crash. I'm surprised that everyone got away clean. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on that. And
Kenny, I feel for Kenny. I mean, he's so lucky he never got hurt. Then it throws a chain or the chain, whatever it is, I'm not too sure. But I don't know about the sand sections. You know, I mean, I think for the fans, it's a good thing because it's an added element. But I think on the backside of the riders and the teams, it's like you work so hard to make that bike so good for supercross. They're so stiff. You're fighting traction and feel and hand control constantly, and then you go throw sand in there, which just is the total opposite to how you would set a bike up. So there's, you know, on the technical side, I think it's pretty tough because, you know, that's where a majority of the crashes were. Then you got ruts and supercross, and I don't know. I don't know if I'm a fan of the big sand sections, a little bit maybe, but I think that, I don't know. I'm still on the fence on that.
One thing that sort of sticks out to me is that you never see a sand section at a practice track, or these very, very seldom do you see it. So I think a lot of guys have a really hard time setting up the bike for it. And it's like,
that's what I was kind of mentioning. It's like, you know, you work all season, off season to make supercross bike good for supercross. And then you go throw in, you know, this sand section that falls apart and there's no consistency. It's like that look like Southwick, right? Do you run a paddle tire? Do you soften the fork and shock? Do you, you know, that was such a major part of the race, but it was only for 4 or 5 seconds, but it was a part of the track.
Yeah.
But everyone has to deal with it. I mean, everyone's the same. Everyone rides the same track.
So staying in the 450 class, Eli Tomac busts his leg. And like he rode with a broken fibula.
Yeah.
Which, if there was ever a even glimmer, a sniff of doubt that Eli Tomac is not a bad, bad man and wants this more than anything else, it's the fact that he rode with a broken fibula with one foot on the bike through the whoops, and now we'll be out for likely the remainder of the series as he repairs a broken leg. Everyone remembers Ryan Hughes racing Southwick with a broken leg and then actually having to miss Bud's Creek the following weekend. But yeah, it like just hats off to Eli. He's the baddest man on the planet.
When I seen the x-ray, I mean, it didn't look good from the snippet that I seen. But I mean, they had to have known that it was broken, and he's all, let me deal with it. He had to have and gone, I'm going to try. And he's still, what was it, 15th? Still a good effort. Yeah.
No, 17th overall, but still, like, the fact that he qualified with that leg the way it was. Like, honestly, if he, Eli with a broken leg qualified ahead of, like, minimum 20 other guys, which is mind-blowing. Like, honestly, if you're one of those guys that got beat by Eli on one leg, like, that really speaks volumes as to how good Eli Tomac is. And then on top of that, like, we lose Eli Tomac here on a Wednesday. It gets released. The press release comes out from Yamaha. And about an hour later, Hunter Lawrence, I suspect this is a injury that basically because of all, like, he missed the night because of kind of hitting his head and not feeling comfortable going back out there. It didn't look like he had any type of arm issue. I suspect that this torn labrum is actually, that was a prior injury. And like now that he's DNF'd or he had missed an entire round, he's like, let's go get this thing fixed.
Yeah, my suspicion. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. Well, but yeah, the 450 class is definitely,
it's dwindling.
We've lost the
attrition. Are we down to a two horse race? I guess is what I'm trying to ask here.
Maybe three. Depends on Kenny.
He just got 21st.
Right, because he couldn't finish.
Yeah, like I hate to say this, I would not.
Had the red plate.
He did. And that's the craziest thing is that like 3 weeks ago, like it's Kickstart Kenny with the red plate and the bike looks awesome and all that fun stuff. But coming into the season, I think if you're looking in, like truth serum at your heart of hearts, can Ken Roczen win this title? And most people would say it's possible.
It's plausible.
It's plausible. Can Ken Roczen win this championship with a DNF?
No.
I'm just trying to be real here.
Never.
Now he needs one from the other two. Now is what is basically like it, the like I like, in order for him to win a championship, he needs for this championship he needs a DNF from both his top competitors, being Chase Sexton and Cooper Webb. Those two guys in order for that DNF to not affect him, he needs those to be canceled out by their own. And those can totally happen, but they're unlikely.
Well, I mean, the other scenario is he goes out and wins the majority of the races left, even though he's at a point deficit because of a silly crash and a lapper and a DNF. Sometimes there's more street credit to winning all those races in the championship.
Mm-hmm. So 250 East, Max Anstey proves for once and for all that being a little bit older in this series is definitely a benefit because you just know how to stay calm, weather the storm, not get caught up in the fact that it's round one and all that fun stuff, and just deliver a clutch performance. Right. Both his heat race and the main event, if I'm not mistaken, got red flagged, did they not?
I believe you're right.
Yes. And he was able to inherit the lead after the red flag of that heat race. He took it away from Pierce Brown. And it was because of Pierce Brown needing attention in their main event that he then took the lead and was able to race off. And honestly, he had was that the issue that ended up causing the red flag? Or was there a red? Yeah, there was a red flag in the main event.
Mm.
And that was while Pierce was leading. It wasn't both situations weren't Pierce, because the other one was I believe a KTM rider that had gone down as a privateer, Connor Stevenson, or not Connor Steven, Carter Stevenson, goes down. But in both situations, Max Anstey, cool under pressure, tons of speed. All of the preseason hype is confirmed with him grabbing the first round win. He'll have the red plate when they show up to Detroit this weekend, which is everyone's favorite round.
Well, I mean, like, there's that age old saying, right? Like, you can't win it in the first round, but you sure can lose it. And he was smart enough to play it safe. And, you know, whether that is experience, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, there was McAdoo. I mean, obviously, it got out that he has a torn ACL. I mean, he did quite well and still salvaged the podium. He's still in it for a fight. So yeah, no, it's all good. Good for Anstey.
Yeah. Brown's out.
Yeah. Unfortunately, again, you never want to see any of that ever happen, right? No. It sucks.
In the case of Dax and Bennick, and I think there's a lot of people last year, he was number 59, he's a rookie, he gets on the podium for round one, he will be missing this weekend coming up as he hit his head during practice, I believe it was either today or yesterday. Him and I were texting back and forth. He doesn't seem worried, and he doesn't think the fans should be worried about this either. Yeah, it's never good to miss rounds, but it sounds like he's going to be fine. And in so many ways, this is part of his progression. Like, if anything, this just takes a little bit of pressure off the remainder of the season. Like, yeah, I think that it would be like, it's like Daxon Bennick is extremely talented and can challenge for podiums and wins. Does spending 3 years in the 250 class, getting a championship, backing that championship up and moving straight to the 450 class, is that the best route for him? I can't say that, but I can say that I've seen a lot of guys get that championship early in their 250 career and then struggle mightily to remain employed in the 450 class, because they moved out of the 250 class too early.
Look at RJ.
Yeah.
Or Smith.
Any of those guys.
Any of those guys are, you know, get a goal.
The guy who won the race.
Yeah.
Like,
so, I mean, I think, you know, when you look at all that and you go back to, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, I mean, that was the trend, right? You stayed in the 125 class no more than 3 years, and then you went to a 450, and that was why they had all those point out rules and all that sort of stuff. You know, because supposedly, well, the 125 class back then was entry level and it's only classed as regional, right? So, you know, that's the long and the short of trying to stay in that series as long as you can, because 450 rides are pretty, pretty hard to come by at the moment.
Yeah, they are. So that being said, My question to you is, who is the biggest threat to Anstey going forward in this championship? Is it Hamaker? Is it Kitchen, who had an uncharacteristically bad night, both qualifying and in the main event, seemed to go down twice? Is it Vial, who's carrying the number one plate, which, like, I don't even have him penciled in for a win this year? Is it Cameron McAdoo, who only has one ACL? My friend?
Again, like the lights it's always, you know, it's so good that it's tough to pick, right? These guys only do half the series, right? That's why it's a regional championship. But I think that the likes of Kitchen, Hamaker will bounce back. Everyone tends to have a bad race at some point. So I'm curious. I think you'll see some different guys this weekend. They got the first one out of the way, whether they missed on some stuff that they worked on preseason and they went, oh, that's where I need to go. It's hard to say, but I think Kitchen will bounce back. McAdoo will bounce back. Bennett, Daxton, depending on how he heals. I mean, he's going to be good. I don't know. Anstey, I don't know. I mean, he's been there before.
I feel for RJ because he just gets caught up in that tough block and it costs him an entire lap.
Yeah.
That bums me out.
I mean, you got two champions on the same line that, you know, they haven't fired yet. We'll see what happens this weekend.
Here's one thing. Like, this is completely, like, you can choose to agree with me or not agree with me. But, like, given the fact that, like, say if they were at a East-West shootout, and actually at the East-West shootouts, I hope that they do, in fact, allow RJ to run the number one plate. Should Vial be running the 1E and should RJ be running the 1W all season?
Because they switched coasts.
Yeah. It's just they earned the one, the like.
No, because they're not on the, they're not representing the coast that they won on.
Okay. Well, they are, like, I mean, Vial is because he won the East Coast Championship and then he's running number one. So at an East West showdown, should they both be running the number one?
No.
Damn.
No, because RJ switched coasts.
But he's the defending champ.
It doesn't matter. He's not riding that coast. If he rode that coast, yes. Thank you. No, he changed coast. Simple.
I don't know. I like the look of the 1W, and I want RJ to be able to ride his number.
You
know,
that's always a good. It's a good looking number. I'm not going to lie with you. But he opted to change.
Looks better than 23. I tell you that much.
Yeah. Whatever. Anyway. Next question.
All right, fair enough. Prediction for Detroit for what's left of the 450 class and the 250 East. Who you got for your winners?
I'm gonna go with Webb this weekend.
Ooh.
You know, you're getting into it. He's a solid.
Gonna be
assassin.
Soft and ruddy. I'm gonna tell you that right now.
Yep.
It's been wet and it's been cold. That dirt has been hanging out somewhere under an underpass in Detroit, somewhere in Michigan. That dirt is going to be ruddy and crumbly. And I think that is going to be Cooper Webb all day long.
Yep. Chase, it'll be good. I mean, I'd really like to see Kenny and those three guys take it to the wire.
Yeah.
That would be good.
Yeah, I think in order for that to happen, like I said, Chase and Webb need to have like uncharacteristically bad nights on the same night that Kenny pulls one out of the hat. But I don't wish ill on anybody, but for the sake of this championship and the entertainment of it, I think that's what we need to see happen.
Well, I mean, we've spoke about this before. I mean, what happens now is it just opens the door up for, you know, the Plessingers and so on, that, you know, there's a few of those key guys missing, which, like I said, we never want to see, but it gives those guys a boost of confidence that they can do well. I mean, I don't know what Honda will do. Both their guys are out. Technically,
that's a great point.
Technically, they have to field a rider. So I don't know who or where or what they'll do, and no one likes to do it because it takes so much more time, money, and effort to get someone, get them on that equipment, get used to them, get them comfortable, and know you're out there just to support someone because it's contractual.
Does this sound crazy? This might be crazy. You know who just won a championship on a Honda? AMA champion.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
You think they call him the nuclear element? Does the 66 show up? Vince Freezy? How crazy! Like that would be all the way bonkers if all of a sudden in the Detroit like SAG excuse for pits, there's a number 66 sitting under the HRC rig.
Well, like I said, like I know a little bit. I don't know if I'm correct on this, but majority of those teams like have contracts that they have to field riders, else they get fined.
Yeah, yeah.
So they will have to I think they give you a week or two's grace in something like
Sure, but none of those guys are coming back.
But they got a lot. I mean, you know, they got their lights guys, but
one.
Well, there's like two guys.
Does Smokin' Joe Shimoda make his 450 debut? That's how we got Cole Seeley to make his debut.
True.
Because
that was the same with Jeremy Martin.
Yeah,
because Kenny was out at Geico, and then he went to Honda and replaced Kenny. Same with Christian Craig.
Yeah, is this like actually? Did they just go off the board and just bring in J-Mart? Is that the craziest thing I've ever said on this podcast? Probably.
I don't think he's been riding.
I mean, they could probably bring back K-Dub. The guy's looking like he might have put on a few pounds since Loretta Lynn's 2023, but like based off the riding footage, he looks pretty like he's hitting the whoops in sneakers.
Yeah. Okay, Dub. Yeah, they broke the mold after that guy.
No, they absolutely did. Like, well, what is with like factory superstars being able to hit whoops? Like I've seen David Villeman do it. I've seen Kevin Windham do it in street clothes.
Because they did it for 15, 20 years every single day. That's the difference.
That blows me away. That like, no, like I feel like no matter how long I train at that like, Kevin Windham off the couch is blowing by me every time. And that makes me sad in my heart. But whatever.
Maybe I call Bungie up again.
Perfect. Yeah, let's get him going. Hoppo, appreciate you making some time for this podcast. I got to get on to the next call here. But let's say we do this in 1 week's time and we bring in a guest here on the Racer's Mindset.
Yep, let's do that. Let's work on it.
Sounds good. And for those who are looking to take their personal development to the next level, their fitness goals to be achieved, where can they find you? Where can they get in contact?
You can go to my website at hoppofit.com. That's the main one. Or you can go to Instagram at hoppohoppo and just send me a message through there. Perfect, two easiest platforms.
Love it. You have yourself a great rest of your day. Don't hang up just yet. But for podcast sake, we're going to cut things off. Right there.